host for the day. Today we're going to begin talking about how our county health department serves the residents of our county. And I say our county instead of mentioning particularly Hunterdon, because this, I think what we're going to be talking about with our guest in a little bit applies to most health departments and the way that counties and larger organizations serve their communities. And it turns out, I'm keeping it a secret for a few more minutes, it turns out that our guest knows a lot about our quest for keeping our county healthy, keeping Hunterdon County healthy. And she has some very interesting stuff to talk to us about. Generally speaking, the health department works to prevent disease, to promote healthy lifestyles, and to protect the health and well-being, not only of our residents, but of the tourists and visitors that come. Fortunately, and I think as we talk a little bit more today, we'll hear that an awful lot of what the health department does is unseen. And that's pretty good, because that lets us know that we are healthy and that they are preventing disease and that they are taking care of us. So today we're going to first start talking a little bit about, and just take a bite of this big elephant called keeping large groups and counties or states or whatever healthy. Take a bite first on communicable disease. And before you think that that's just something boring that you know all about, getting your kids to the pediatrician or the vaccinations or vaccines you need, there are 70, that is in 70, reportable communicable diseases that are required, that when this breaks out, they're required to be reported. And we're going to learn a little bit about why that is. So let's dive into this and meet our guest and get started. We have with us Karen DeMarco, who is a master in public health, and she is our Hunterdon County Health Officer and our epidemiologist. Welcome, Karen.
Thank you so much for having me today, Suzanne.
I'm excited. When Karen and I talk about getting ready for the show and what we think our listeners would most like to hear, I was fascinated, really, Karen, by all the stuff that goes on behind the scenes and how intricate and yet, as I say, invisible, which means that it works that smoothly, thank goodness, in good times.
Absolutely. We have a number of different programs within the health division, and I think residents are generally surprised to learn about how many different programs we have. But as you said, we're working to keep the land and the air and the community healthy. So we're doing that through a number of different services, and we achieve that mission of prevention through a multidisciplinary staff. So we have a staff of nurses, registered environmental health specialists, entomologists on staff, epidemiologists, and support staff who are trained in everything from recycling to hazardous materials response to going out and testing ticks and mosquitoes for disease to see what the threats are within our community. We have maternal and child health programs, again, vector control, and public health emergency preparedness.
Let's slow down here for our listeners, I think, a little bit, and tell us, what does it take to be a health officer? Tell us a little bit about yourself, Karen.
Okay. I have been with Hunterdon County for about 5 years. I started as the infectious disease epidemiologist with the preparedness program and then became the health officer about 3 years ago. Prior to coming to Hunterdon County, I was with a neighboring county for about 10 years, primarily as the infectious disease epidemiologist. So communicable disease is near and dear to my heart. It's where I started with public health and working with each of those different 70 diseases that you listed that are reportable. What we mean by reportable diseases is in the state of New Jersey, public health departments are following what's called New Jersey Administrative Code. And that's set by the state health department and really dictates what, by law, the county health department is charged with doing. Sometimes that's enforcing laws, working with our restaurants to make sure that they're keeping a clean establishment so that's not creating foodborne disease outbreaks, and they're following all those laws to keep your food source healthy so that we can go out to eat and feel comfortable doing that. It also does include communicable disease control. And we're following Centers for Disease Control guidance also with that.
So it's national, it's state, County. And then do you have any enforceable regulations with town, with municipalities, or are they all separate?
So we cover all of the towns within Hunterdon County, so they all fall under those same requirements for reportable diseases. There could be separate ordinances that towns could choose specifically if there's an issue with solid waste control and things of that nature. But in terms of communicable disease, they're all covered under the same reporting requirements.
Wow. And we're talking about reporting requirements. So what does Hunterdon County's report card look like? I mean, do you have, for instance, you must measure some of this stuff, do you?
Absolutely.
Okay, so what does that look like? Say, just let's look at last year.
Sure. So last year alone, so we're talking about 70 different diseases. So that could be from salmonella to bacterial meningitis to campylobacter to pertussis.
Wait.
Too many words, too many syllables.
Campylobacter. Give us ones that we might recognize,
right.
Although I know the list of 70, we might get a few that we recognize.
Right.
But
so measles is one.
There you go.
that we hadn't seen too much of, fortunately, because it is vaccine preventable. But unfortunately, within the last few years, we've seen more cases of measles. And I have a couple good examples of how we've dealt with that. So generally, how do we find out about these 70 different reportable diseases? We don't just wait for them to come to us. Physicians and laboratories are legally required, if they diagnose any of these 70 reportable diseases, to notify the health department. And some of them are immediately reportable to the health department. So I mentioned bacterial meningitis is one of those. So if a physician suspects a case of bacterial meningitis within the ER, has someone who's looking like bacterial meningitis, even if it's not diagnosed but they suspect it, they are required to call the health department, whether it's 2 o'clock in the morning or 2 o'clock in the afternoon, to let us know that there is a case of this infectious disease within the community.
And are they prioritized, or is that with that? That's not every communicable disease that's that urgent, or is are they that urgent?
No, they are not all that urgent. And generally, the health department and the Centers for Disease Control sets sort of a guidebook for the health department in how to handle each of these different infectious diseases. So each of these 70 diseases has a different protocol that the health department is to follow, and we need to touch each and every one of those diseases. So going back this year alone, in the last 12 months, we've had 2,500 cases of reportable disease reported to the health division.
Wow.
So we have four full-time nurses. Not all of them are working solely on communicable disease, and they are touching each and one of those cases of 2,500. So that's a pretty hefty workload that our nurses have, and it can range from, for instance, if we have a report of Lyme disease, the state asks us, the protocol for that is to go and confirm that diagnosis with the physician. So we will reach out to the physician, find out what the signs and symptoms were, and where that individual may have been, where they may have contracted Lyme disease.
Let's start from this person may or may not, or probably either was in the ER or went to a physician.
Uh-huh.
Okay, let's take Lyme disease. Okay.
Okay.
Person A, doctor.
Sure.
So take us through that chain so that folks know all the behind-the-scenes steps that are taken.
Sure, absolutely. I can start with Lyme disease, and then perhaps I'll go into one of the more immediately reportable ones, diseases on the list. So with Lyme disease, you may have a variety of different factors. You're going to see your primary care physician. Someone may not go to the emergency room if they're having symptoms of Lyme disease. So they may go see their physician. Their physician will run a number of different tests. And what we're seeing now is with the advancement in our laboratory services, we're seeing a lot of different tick-borne diseases coming through. So we're also seeing babesiosis, ehrlichiosis. We're seeing those types of tick-borne diseases on the rise.
I love it when you speak that way.
I'll try to throw more of those in. So we're seeing those diseases rise just because we have the laboratory ability to test for them. So we have better data. So with a case of Lyme disease, that may be reported to us through the laboratory as well. So the health department has what's called the Communicable Disease Reporting and Surveillance System, which is a web-based secure system that only the health department has access to. It, again, is secure to protect the privacy of the individuals who go in, but essentially it's a medical record of everyone who may have any of these 70 diseases, and the laboratory information is electronically reported to the health division. We are able to check that system, and we will then follow the protocol for that disease. So if that's to reach out to the physician, confirm that diagnosis of Lyme disease, And then we have that information. So we know that Lyme disease is the highest reported communicable disease in Hunterdon County and and in New Jersey.
Is that right?
So we're consistent with that. And what that helps us do, not only...
And it is Lyme, right? Not Lymes.
Correct. No S on the end. So what that helps us do, not only are we able to contact the patient or do whatever is medically necessary, for Lyme disease, it is not spread person to person. So it is not an immediately reportable disease, so that will come to us, with the laboratory surveillance. It's more urgent when a disease, it can be spread person to person. So not only does that give us information about the disease itself, but it also lets us know Lyme disease is the most prevalent or one of the most prevalent health issues in Hunterdon County, and we can tailor health education programs and how people can limit their exposure to ticks and making sure that they have that information. So we're able to take that data about disease and translate that into programming to help prevent that disease. So that's so much of what the health department does. So when you said so much of what we do is unseen, because if public health is working and creating those health education programs and preventing case of disease, you're not seeing that because it's working.
Okay. If someone's under the care of a physician, one assumes they then maintain all the monitoring, or is that something that once you're notified, you have to be sticky with?
Right.
Or
public health is different than medical care. So
yes.
We're looking at the public health.
Nice distinction. Say it again.
Yes.
I'll interrupt you. Say it again.
Public health is looking at the community health as a whole. It's not specific medical care. So we generally don't go in and tell a physician how to treat a case. Of course, we're working with them as partners. So we may work with the physician on who that person may have had close contact with, or they will assist in our investigation when necessary. A big source of information for the health division oftentimes is the infectious disease preventionist at our hospital systems. So, but no, it is very different than specific medical care. To go back a little bit on an immediately reportable disease, so if we had a case of bacterial meningitis, so that is an immediately reportable disease. If a physician suspects or diagnoses that illness, they are required to call the health division. And the reason they are is because specifically with that disease, it is spread through kissing, hugging, sharing eating utensils with those around you. It is spread through the saliva. So anyone who had that close contact with that individual 10 days prior to them becoming ill is at risk of getting that illness as well. So the health...
And it's a severe illness.
Potentially fatal illness, yes. So in order to keep those close contacts from becoming ill, the health department, what our responsibility is there, is to either work with the family, work with the patient if we can, to determine who their close contacts are and recommend that they get antibiotics to prevent that illness.
The contacts, you mean?
Correct.
Wow.
So depending on what the illness is, again, each of these 70 different diseases has a protocol that we follow. So bacterial meningitis is probably one of the most intensive cases
urgent.
That we would have, urgent, and measles as well is another that we would move very quickly on because it is so communicable. For example, a few years back, we had one of the largest household clusters in New Jersey history of measles. And the reason you didn't hear about that in the news, we hear about other outbreaks throughout the country. You didn't hear about that because the health division was working so closely with the family and had them quarantined so that they were not exposing the rest of the Hunterdon County population. And that was a win for public health. You know, we worked closely with that family, and it was unfortunate that the family had to deal with that measles illness, but we kept everyone else healthy within the community, and they followed those public health guidelines, and it was a partnership with that family and with the medical provider to keep that illness from spreading throughout Hunterdon County.
Wow. It's impressive, the scope and the clarity with which, and then you must document that somehow in some...
We do. In all of those instances, so the information that we collect, the state health department also has access to that. And then we're always working with the state health department and reporting to them if we have a large outbreak or in unusual cases of individual disease, if we need guidance on that. Because in a sense, our public health nurses are disease investigators. They're going in, they're speaking to families, they're trying to determine where individuals may have gotten disease. It's not only to limit the spread of disease from person to person, but part of it is also trying to investigate what the source of that illness would be. So if we have a case of hepatitis A, which is a foodborne illness, we will try to determine where that confirmed case had eaten during the period where they may have become infected.
If at home or
if at
whatever,
home, yes. If at a restaurant. And another success story, we had a few within.
You know what?
I'm gonna take a break.
Yeah, I'm gonna let you get a little oxygen over there.
Talk fast.
Take a break to, but keep that story because even though we've sort of decided how we want to go through our conversation today, that sounds exciting to me to hear, and it's informative for our listeners.
All right.
So yes, we're going to listen to some of the of our sponsors here that keep Hunterdon and Chamber Radio WHCRDB in alive.
You're listening to WHCRDB Hunterdon and Chamber Radio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
I'm your eyes remain, stop me when I'm passing by.
It's time to visit Pambee's, the newest ice cream shop in town. Pambee's Purely Delicious ice cream, gelato, and sorbet made in Hunterdon County from unique blends of natural extracts, herbs, and spices. Created with a rich, creamy texture bursting with flavor. Tickle your palate with exotic flavors such as rose cardamom, hot mango, and ginger lemon. Or satisfy your craving for dark chocolate, pecans, and caramel. Located on Route 31 south of Clinton. Pambee's. Purely delicious.
See, now all my flavors are guaranteed to satisfy.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Welcome back to Hunterdon Chamber Radio. We're talking with our health officer and epidemiologist, Karen DeMarco, and we spent considerable time talking, surprisingly, I think, maybe to most listeners, about communicable disease, but I cut you off right in front of a story. So finish that, and then we have a lot more, to chat with a bit with our listeners. So.
Absolutely. So we were talking about hepatitis A. We had a foodborne, it was a food worker who was a confirmed hepatitis A case. So that is quite an urgent situation because that is spread through hands that may not be washed. And so when we have someone who has a disease that can be spread person to person in that fashion and works in the food industry, we want to find out about that as soon as we can and also want to determine if there's anyone else ill at that food establishment. We were able to move quickly on that case and to eliminate the spread, and there were no other cases associated with that. So, again, it involves a lot of teamwork with our public health nurses and communicating risks to a variety of different people who may be affected, and also following those state protocols. So we're working with our state partners in all of those cases to let them know if there is an outbreak, if we need guidance. We always have a hand there with our state health department. What they're doing also is they're giving the information about the different communicable diseases we're seeing in Hunterdon County and in New Jersey, throughout New Jersey. They're giving that information to our federal partners, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And what that allows them to do is to create a snapshot of the different health issues across the country and in New Jersey. And it also allows for the ability to detect outbreaks. With the advances, I mentioned the advances in laboratory science, we're able to determine if a case of salmonella, it will have like a blueprint to it, a DNA to it, where we can link it to other cases. So if you see nationwide recalls of a certain product, that's how they've been linked. The Centers for Disease Control and the state health departments are working with their local health departments to kind of connect the dots to see if there has been an epidemiological link between any of those cases. So did any of those cases eat the same product, and we're able to tie that together. And we can do that then also through laboratory evidence of taking food samples and then biological samples from the individual and tie that all together.
Wow.
Yes.
It's sophisticated.
It is.
Investigative, process. Give us a time span. What, you see one or two here and then maybe, south of us 60 miles, there's another, and then New York reports one or two. What's a process time? Not clocking it out, but what, just so when we hear that on the television or whatever,
sure,
what kind of time frame do you think something like that happens in?
So it depends where an outbreak is happening. So an outbreak can be two or more cases of any one disease within a certain geographical area or time frame. So it really depends. The easy answer is it depends. So it depends on what...
No fair.
Yeah, I know.
I'm going to push.
it depends on what the disease is. So if we're working with a school, so we've just entered school season, and we start to see outbreaks of GI illness, gastrointestinal illness,
yeah,
strep, influenza, we'll start to see that this time of year. And if we start to see two kids in the same classroom with the same illness, we will consider that an outbreak, and we'll start to keep track of how many kids are having that same illness. We'll start working with the school, giving them hand-washing messaging, making sure surfaces are being cleaned, and having that prevention message. So again, it's like that one or two cases is our trigger, it's our red flag, and then we know we need to go in and make an intervention. So
and that process takes... What? I know it depends. So if it's local in a school like that, yes. Supposing we are talking about a product that people are buying, that's fairly sophisticated and it's fairly widespread. So
that is.
By the time we hear it, I'm making this up, right? So is it 2 days? Is it a week? Is it 10 days?
It would take longer than that, depending on getting the food product. If you're getting samples, you're sending that to a lab. The lab is giving that information to the state. So it could take a couple weeks. It could even take longer than that if there are cases throughout the United States to have that all linked together. But the important piece is that you're going into the local cases, you're going into the households, and making sure they have the information so that, A, they don't spread it to their family members, so that they're washing their hands well, they're cleaning surfaces, and we're giving them the information that we have so that they can prevent that spread of illness within their household. And then working with our state partners on the health division side to make sure they have all of the information. And if they're connecting dots, they will come back to us. But it can take some amount of time, and you need enough cases to add up that you really start to see something.
Okay. And there was one other loop before we move on to another subject. We could probably spend 2 days talking about this, but what you were talking about, the food worker with hepatitis. So what's then the intervention with the, what do you call the carrier? No, did I make that up? What is there a name for the person who's the identified?
We would just say the case.
The case,
the
okay.
Case, yeah.
So how do you close the loop then on that?
So we close the loop on that in that person is excluded from work until they follow the intervention that we need. So they need to have no signs or symptoms, and we also make sure that they've received hepatitis A vaccination. We will do the same with other food workers there. You'll see now the hepatitis A vaccine is available, so you'll see child care workers and some getting that even without having disease, but to prevent it.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so I think a couple things we had outlined that we want folks to know about. So I'd like to move on, if we can, a little bit
sure.
to this. We talked a bit about taking care of something that comes to you either by a lab test, a physician, or someone reporting ill at work or something like that.
Sure.
But you're not just a reactive department, are you?
No.
So maybe we can share with our listeners here a little bit more about preparedness.
Sure, absolutely. And with each of these different cases, we're working together with our staff, and sometimes it's our registered environmental health specialists working hand in hand with our public health nurses. Another large program within the health division is just that public health preparedness. So that's doing strategic planning and oftentimes preparing for the worst and planning for public health emergencies that we hope we'll never have to deal with, but that we need to be prepared to deal with.
What's an example?
So an example of that is having to vaccinate the entire or provide medication to the entire Hunterdon County population. So we have a population of 130,000 in Hunterdon County. If there was ever some type of public health emergency...
Such as
a bioterrorism attack. Unfortunately, this is something that we need to be aware of. Again, something we hope we never have to deal with, but if we do, we want to be as prepared as we can be. There could also be naturally occurring outbreaks. It would be unlikely that there would be something naturally occurring that we would need to vaccinate the entire population or give them medication. But, if you imagine that the health division is a staff of approximately 30 people. You know, how can a staff of that size who do not all work in public health preparedness, how could we ever possibly give medication to all 130,000 people? So we've received a grant through the federal government, channeled through the state health department, our public health preparedness grant since 2003. And over that time frame, we've tried a number of different strategies, and we're starting to hone our skills on how could we get this medication out to all Hunterdon County families in a timely manner. We would be asked to get that medication out within 36 hours.
Wow.
So that's
impressive.
A pretty fast turnaround.
And that's, I'm gonna stretch here, so tell me where I'm wrong. And I would assume if it were a case like that, it wouldn't just be our 130,000 residents, but it would include folks that come here to work.
Absolutely.
You know, and even one would have to imagine perhaps even visitors that are staying. Okay. So it's anyone exposed. It's not necessarily, we're not going to say, show me your address and what apartment do you live in, right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And we wouldn't turn anyone away in that circumstance. So if we had people coming in with out-of-state plates and they asked for medication, we would give it to them because the goal would be getting medication into people. It wouldn't be, again, asking for their address and seeing where they live because perhaps they were here, perhaps they were exposed. It would be about protecting the population.
And let's give our listeners we're talking in the abstract here. That's, when little white powder shows up in envelopes. I mean, it's
right.
That kind of thing that we're talking
Absolutely.
About, right?
Absolutely.
That's even if it's, it has to be verified and so forth, or it could be something with our water. We've got two big reservoirs, right, don't we? Maybe more, I don't know, shame on me. But, something like that is the magnitude you're talking about.
Yes.
And then we would be prophylactically or, ahead of the game here.
Exactly.
Okay.
It would be for individuals who are exposed but did not have illness. So, again, we would be working with, and if it was a white powder incident or something along those lines.
And we're talking about anthrax or something like that for white
Correct.
Powder. That's what I used euphemistically.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay, good.
We'd be working with our federal partners, and not only our federal partners, but we have exercises every year. So we practice this. We practice how will we get this medication out to our entire population. And we have found different strategies. So one of the best strategies that we're working on now is to work with the large employers within Hunterdon County to really delegate that to them, that they would let us know how many employees and their family members, how many people do they have within their agency, and their one person from that employer will come, pick up the medication, and then take it back to their place of employment and distribute it to their employees and
that
family.
Place of employment, the employers also have teams and strategies that you have helped, I would imagine, you've helped them strategize so that they're prepared. It's not one person there with the gang running through the door.
That's correct.
It's a team that then knows what they need to do should something like that happen.
That's correct. So last year we held a drill, which was a drive-through operation. So again, doing this faster, doing it smarter. And we don't do this in a vacuum, so we worked hand-in-hand with our Office of Emergency Management, with the EMS providers within the community in case there was some type of incident. We have them on scene.
EMS is like our squads.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
We work with our Hunterdon County Prosecutor's Office. They provide protection and security of that asset. So what we would be requesting, so a federal asset is called the Strategic National Stockpile, and that's a large supply of antibiotics and medications that if we find something is going on within Hunterdon County, I would request that through our Office of Emergency Management. We're all working in collaboration to make sure that that asset is ordered correctly, it's brought in securely. Our prosecutor's office, again, is providing the security for that.
Who knew? No, seriously. Keep going. I'm sorry. I'm just amazed and delighted, if you will, for
absolutely.
Such a subject. But
no, absolutely. This is something that we practice continually. And again, we're always fine-tuning those practices on how can we do this smarter. So last year's exercise working with our fixed facilities, so those are those large employers who have pre-registered with us to say, yes, they will step up and they will protect their employees if there is ever this type of emergency. They drove through. We had a drive-through operation. We gave some pallets of medication that they would take back. And those are individuals who will then not have to stand in a long line at a public county pod, point of distribution, because they'll have it already. We also have a program with our first responders, because if we don't provide medication to our first responders, they're not out in the field providing ambulance services or protecting the population. So that's just one of the strategies that we're using now. We've also been working with a group of municipal offices of emergency management who are planning on running their own medication distribution if the need is ever there, and that we would be running a county point of distribution concurrently with this Office of Emergency Management.
So it's amazing. I mean, someone might see a snapshot in the local newspaper with a caption saying, you know, and you see somebody lying down or something with a stretcher. But the intricacy and the thoroughness with which these are planned, and as you say, practiced.
Absolutely.
Most of that is unseen, folks.
It is unseen. You might see the lighted sign along the side of the road that we're running a drill or an exercise, and we have one upcoming in November again. So we have a number of different sites within Hunterdon County that we've deemed could be a good site for us to run a public medication distribution, but we need to test those sites and go in frequently and have a security plan for each of those sites. There's a lot, like you said, it's all in the details and moving the logistics of moving, you know, tables and chairs and the medication, making sure it's protected, and working to make sure that we have appropriate public messaging that would go out there. How would our residents know where to go? And that's something that we work on continually, is making sure that we have...
Because not everybody has a computer or a smartphone or whatever,
that's right?
Right?
So. That's right. And we could work with our Office of Emergency Management. We have the Everbridge system. Some townships have the Nixle system. So we'd be working with our township officials and our county officials to make sure that we would get that information out. But the health division alone doesn't have everything that we would need to make that happen. We don't have the security piece.
Our listeners to the podcast of when we have our chief of staff here a couple programs ago, a couple months ago, where he talked about both those communication systems. And if worse comes to worse, you hang a printed sign on the door of the school or the community center or something. Yeah.
Yes, we get the information out. So that is one part of the preparedness program.
What would be another example?
So another program that we run through preparedness as we're in hurricane season is that we are deemed responsible to run a medical needs shelter operation. So there is the public shelter. So if ever, you know, power went down, people needed a sheltering location. There is a county shelter. But if there are individuals who need more support, more medical support, and cannot be in a public shelter with the general population, but they're not... They don't quite need a hospital situation either. They would come to the county's medical need shelter operation. And again, we practice that continually, setting up.
And someone directs them. People don't just self-subscribe or self-appoint.
Yes, there would be messaging with the general need shelter and additional messaging throughout the county on where that medical need shelter would be. But we have a Medical Reserve Corps volunteer team that works with our public health preparedness program. So some of those volunteer nurses would be helping us to staff that medical need shelter, among many other operations our Medical Reserve Corps volunteers assist us with. But again, that's having a shelter operations, it's setting up beds, getting temp nurses if needed, working with our Medical Reserve Corps volunteers, and that's another thing that we drill and exercise quite often. I didn't mention our buildings and maintenance staff for the county. They also assist us a lot with these different operations as well. They help us to mobilize different logistics and moving equipment throughout the county. So again, it's a team effort for sure with different departments.
More evidence of your county at work, which is why this program I think is important, because an awful lot of what happens, probably the greater majority of what happens throughout the county is unseen.
Absolutely.
You know, you might see at the park system if a trail's not cut, but what you don't see is all these other, unseen folks that work together, practice, they're prepared, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
You had a quick story. I don't know if it's very long, we only need the Reader's Digest version, I guess. But you had said, a while back, remember, there was an Ebola scare, right? So how did that go down around
Sure.
here?
Absolutely. So the pods are getting medication out to the population.
Points of distribution pods.
Right.
Yes.
And the medical needs sheltering are two big pieces of the preparedness program. But the other piece of the preparedness program essentially is being ready for any emerging infectious disease, a re-emerging infectious disease. So something that we haven't seen within recent history that may cross into New Jersey or Hunterdon County's borders. And how are we going to protect the health of the residents within Hunterdon County and ensure that there isn't an outbreak? And it's almost that you can set your clock by it. Every 18 months, there is some hot topic with public health. So most recently, we've seen Zika virus. So that's something that has been at risk. But a few years back, of course.
Remind folks what Zika virus is.
So Zika virus is a disease that's transmitted through mosquitoes. And, you know, as we've learned more over the last year, it can have some devastating effects on prenatal women, the prenatal pregnant women and the children they're carrying. A few years back, we had the largest Ebola outbreak in Africa. And something the reason we need to keep an eye on what's going on around the world is because it doesn't take very long to get from one side of the world to the other. So if there's a disease over there, it can be over here very quickly.
And we 10 have, hours or less. Sometimes
right.
It's a few more, but
that's
often
right.
A few less.
And we have a population that's traveling, whether for vacation or to visit family. People are moving throughout the population. So when we saw cases of Ebola, not in Hunterdon County, but the large outbreak that occurred in Africa, it really put us into gear in Hunterdon County. So we knew that we needed to have a plan of action. Newark was one of the five airports that was doing active surveillance for people who were traveling, returning from those areas of Africa that were affected, and they were taking active temperature checks. And then if someone had returned from that area, our public health nurses were working to keep in contact with those individuals to monitor their health.
And that is something that would probably have gone on in county health departments all around us.
Absolutely, yes. And we had a smaller number of people who had traveled from that area in comparison to some other areas in New Jersey as well. Some of it was quite high numbers. But we also needed a plan if there was someone within Hunterdon County who met that criteria, so who had traveled to an Ebola-affected nation and who was starting to get a fever or symptoms of Ebola, how were we going to handle that? How were they going to be transported to the emergency department? How was the emergency department then going to manage that? And what that involved was collaboration. So we had the EMS coordinator, we had the OEM coordinator,
Office of Emergency Management. These initials we have to. I'm going to smack your hand. No, just because Office
right.
of Emergency Management, and then
right.
the squad people, the EMS people.
That's
yes.
correct. And
okay.
and our hospital system, and our 911 communication system. We all came together and developed a Hunterdon County specific plan. So looking at the features within our community, if we had someone call into the 911 dispatch and requested medical assistance, the operator then asked them questions if they had traveled. And you may have noticed during that time you were seeing signs in your doctor's office. Do you have a fever? Have you traveled to Africa or any of these other nations? And we had that checklist with our 911 communications. And if they then determined that this person may be at risk for Ebola viral disease, they would alert the Office of Emergency Management, the health division, and the hospital system simultaneously to let them know, give a heads up.
Wow. So you could, and am I presumptive to say that you could just fill in the blank, it's Ebola that you're talking to us about, but it could be another, virally spreading
sure.
or disease like that, and the same kinds of operations would take place.
And that's something that we also did. We provided, there was very specific personal protective equipment that was recommended for our EMS providers, so the ambulance squads, and all three of those groups, so health, OEM, and the hospital system, we worked and purchased that CDC-approved personal protective equipment and provided training to our EMS squads because they didn't have that equipment, and we were able to acquire that. So we provided them with hands-on training on the appropriate donning and doffing of that equipment to keep them safe.
Wow.
And just as you said, so we created, at that time, it was an Ebola response task force for EMS, but we've morphed that into something called a communicable disease EMS task force because the skills they've learned there
yes.
are applicable. And if it's not Ebola, it can be something else next time. And those skills and those planning is still there, even if we need to tweak it based on the disease.
Mm.
So that it's just a good example of collaboration.
Yeah. I know that when this particular show is over, we're going to have to book you right away with a whole bunch more to talk about. But as I look at what we hoped that we might cover, there was a point at which we said that there's that lead poisoning, a bit different now from communicable disease,
yes.
But exposes our children to danger. And I think that when we think in Hunterdon County, we have a highly educated population. We have folks that are very cognitive about their health and well-being. In fact, we are, quote, the healthiest county in New Jersey. Nonetheless, this stuff shows up, and Karen wanted to make sure that we talked just a little bit about lead poisoning, and I was surprised to hear why, but I think it's important for us all to hear. So, you know, how do you find out, and what's the threat, and just sort of give us a primer on that, if you will.
Sure. So, actually, it is a little similar to communicable disease, and that state law requires that children get a blood lead test twice before the age of six. So if you go to your... It's a law.
Got it.
So your pediatrician is required. And oftentimes, unfortunately, I think what happens is the pediatrician is giving a prescription for, you know, an outsourced blood lead test, and sometimes that isn't always followed up, unfortunately.
So it's a prescription, so whether it's taken or not.
Correct.
Got it.
So we encourage all the parents to follow that prescription and get that blood lead test. It's common that people might think lead poisoning is not an issue. In 1978, it was taken out of paint sources, but unfortunately, paint does continue to be the main source of lead poisoning for our children. As we're sitting in Hunterdon County with a lot of beautiful historic buildings, people may be unwittingly putting their children at risk if they're moving into these big, beautiful houses and they're working to restore them. They might not be using those lead-safe work practices. So that's something that Hunterdon County Division of Health can provide information to families. If they're looking to do any type of renovation, we can give them the resources and where they can get information about that. But more urgently, when we are involved, is we receive, if there's an elevated blood lead test that is detected on a child, we will get a copy of that. And what then happens is an investigation, almost similar to communicable disease investigation. We're looking to go in and find out what the source of that lead exposure is. So we have a team. It will be a public health nurse and a specially licensed registered environmental health specialist will go in and work with the family to determine what that source of lead poisoning is. And if it's a paint source in the home, they'll give them resources on how to remediate that and how to help the child not incur any additional lead poisoning.
It's really investigative. You really just have to start from the end and work your way back with
you do. You do, and it's not only lead as a source, but there can be toys that have lead within them that you don't realize. There can be different cultural practices or pottery that isn't glazed appropriately if people are cooking with that. It can have lead.
Toys that come from abroad is a big source. I don't know whether that's just anecdotal and people chat about it or if it's a real...
No, it is true. Toys can have that lead source in them and other chemicals as well. And the reason that we're so concerned about children is because they can absorb these metals because their bodies are growing, their nervous systems are changing, so they're absorbing that more than an adult might. Another source of lead poisoning could be families, if someone's going to a shooting range or if there's some type of occupational exposure that a parent may have and they're coming home and picking up the child, they might not realize that they still have some lead dust on them. So our staff will work with the family to try to determine what that source is and educate them and help to eliminate that. So a lot of it is investigation, and it's also just working hand-in-hand with the people who are affected.
And it's like one-to-one.
Yes, very much so. And having that information and being able to provide that. You know, lead poisoning, it can cause permanent damage. It can cause learning disabilities, speech and language delays, hearing damage.
But let's do those slowly, because I think lead is not in my house or not where I work. So this is not a scare tactic, but I think typical exposures one more time so that people actually get that.
So it can be learning disabilities, attention deficit disorder. Speech and language and behavior problems. So it can be so many different things that you may not recognize it based on the symptoms alone. And I think that just underpins the reason that you need to go for the blood lead testing and pursue that, because otherwise it wouldn't be your first thought. It would be, you know, he's two, he has behavior issues, or is just being a toddler, and you might not think, why would you think lead exposure if it wasn't on your radar?
Do the preschools, are they up to speed on all this?
Early education? Absolutely. They're given information and making sure that they're their surroundings are free of lead paint or
toys.
You know, yes, and right.
Because there's nothing that a child encounters that doesn't eventually find its way to their mouth, right?
Right, and that seems to be the age that, you know, we're most concerned about or that is most affected. You'll see that one to 2 year old that is on the ground, on the, you know, and they're reaching and putting things in their mouth.
Yeah.
So,
I want to have we do have to hear from our sponsors again. We're very grateful to have the sponsors that we have here at 100 and Chamber Radio. So we're going to do that, but then I want to ask you, what happens once somebody's diagnosed and what goes on then after that? So let's hear, first of all, at 100 and Chamber Radio, WHCRDB, let's hear from some of the folks that are sponsoring our program today.
Hi, I'm Joe Peters. Buying or selling a property can be one of the most expensive undertakings you face in your lifetime. And selecting the right realtor to help you through this process can dramatically affect your success or your failure. I have personally helped hundreds of buyers and sellers through this process in achieving their dreams and goals in 100 and Somerset County areas over the past 10 years. I believe that this experience should be a smooth, seamless one for you and not a roller coaster ride. But the best judgment as to whether or not I deliver this to my customers is their reactions in their own words.
One of the things we liked about Joe was that he would return calls within minutes if he wasn't able to pick up.
You know, Joe guided us through the process of selling our home and made a complicated transaction appear seamless.
How do I accomplish this? By approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, I try to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them my own. Then, I go out and take the mass amounts of data that we have and distill them down to a few understandable action points to be considered. Finally, I control the entire process through technology to ensure that we're not going to hit any speed bumps along the way. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let me show you how to take my level of professional expertise and put it to work for you in achieving your real estate goals and dreams. I can be reached at 908-238-0118. Thanks for your time.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, 100inchamberradio.com. Brought to you by the 100in County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
I'm your ice cream man, stop me when I'm passing by.
It's time to visit Pambie's, the newest ice cream shop in town. Pambie's Purely Delicious Ice Cream, Gelato, and Sorbet, made in 100in County from unique blends of natural extracts, herbs, and spices. Created with a rich, creamy texture bursting with flavor. Tickle your palate with exotic flavors such as rose cardamom, hot mango, and ginger lemon. Or satisfy your craving for dark chocolate, pecans, and caramel. Located on Route 31, south of Clinton. Pambie's, Purely Delicious.
See, now all my flavors are guaranteed to satisfy.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, 100inchamberradio.com. Brought to you by the 100in County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
100in Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Welcome back to Your County at Work with Karen DeMarco, our county health officer, and we're learning some incredible things here. I just wanted to finish up. This is our final segment, and I know we wanted to talk about some prevention, but one last thing. If a child is determined, or anyone in the household, but basically you're saying the children are the most susceptible, so they're diagnosed, then y'all figure out where and how that happened. And then what happens after that? I'm always interested in closing loops. People that work with me are sick to death of me closing loops. But anyway, I think it's important with healthcare. Okay.
So with lead poisoning, similar to...
Ooh, I'm sorry, I didn't have your mic on, so could you start again?
Can you hear me?
Yes. Can you hear me now?
So similar to communicable disease, depending on the amount of lead detected in that blood lead test, that can be immediately reportable as well, and we have to move faster because a child may need a medical intervention called chelation to help eliminate that lead from the blood.
What's that?
That's a process that the physician would work with the families to go through that medical procedure. Most of our cases do not require chelation, but an elimination of the lead source in the home.
It's sort of a washing out of.
It does.
In very rough terms.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, diluting and washing out. Okay.
Yes. So our main focus is to eliminate that source in the home, and then that lead is eliminated naturally if we can eliminate that constant source with the child. So, again, our team, a public health nurse and our registered environmental health specialist who are specially trained, they also have some specialized equipment where they can go in and test the paint for the presence of lead, and then they work with the family. And they will spend as much time with the family as necessary in order to determine what that source is. So if there's no source found in the home, they will then try to determine if the child is in child care. Is there some exposure there? Are they spending time at a family member's house? What does the child do from when they wake up to when they go to sleep? So it can be hours and hours of time that our staff spends working that with that family in order to eliminate that source of lead. And the reason this is, you know, a hot topic, especially now, is we've seen lead in the news quite frequently lately within the last year. And the actionable level for us, the state of New Jersey has recently lowered that blood lead level. So in Hunterdon County, generally we'll have, you know, about five to eight cases of lead poisoning within a year. But lowering that,
wow,
that lead level and that actionable level for us could take that up to 20 cases per year. So that's going to increase the workload for our staff and for also the equipment that they're using that requires special calibration and training for that equipment. So, you know, we're working to eliminate that lead source. And the positive point of lowering that blood lead level is that we're getting to children faster. So we will be able to work with the families sooner, knowing that that lead level is lower, and hopefully keep the kids healthier as well.
And I guess that dance is a delicate one with the staff when they identify that with the family, because, you know, it's not finger pointing, it's solution finding.
Right.
And it's let's remediate this together and that kind of thing. But it's a delicate dance, I would imagine, when you're walking into someone's home or investigating family behaviors, exposures, and so forth so closely like that.
Sure. You're dealing with families in a sensitive time, also with communicable disease. In that sense, it's the same, that you're working with families in a time of need and you're working to help them be healthier. And it's something that we take very seriously, and our staff is fantastic, and they're well trained, and they go in very respectfully. And again, our goal is always to keep the children or the individuals healthy, and to eliminate that threat and really prevent any further illness with that family or the affected person.
Yeah. Okay. So, I think that in the few minutes, I was just checking our clock there. This goes so fast. I always feel sorry when we get this close to the end to make sure that we get some stuff in that's really important for our listeners. I think we should probably close our chat together today. And as I say, I already have you marked to come back another time to talk about some other subjects. But let's talk about prevention. And, you know, I mean, I think folks know vaccinations. I think folks know hand washing. But why is it... what changes that from, we have to wash our hands. Oh, yeah, we have to. What changes it? What ups the ante, Karen, that lets people know that this is like the thing, not a
right.
thing, and not a thing that you know so much that you don't pay enough attention? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I want to like... Yeah.
I mean, hand washing alone is probably the single best thing, activity that you can do within your own household when getting home from being out in the public to prevent the spread of illness within your household and out in the community. We're entering flu season, and really that is always one of our biggest messages, whether we're talking to our long-term care facilities or we're talking to our school nurses. The best information to get out there is to keep your hands clean, to keep surfaces clean. If you're sick, stay home. One of our biggest messages, don't send sick kids to school. I know it's tough. you know, people need to get to work, but you're also, you know, eliminating that spread of illness within the community to keep everyone healthy. Again, flu vaccination is your best prevention is to get that flu vaccination every year. That flu virus changes a little bit each year. That's why we need to do it annually. And, you know, we're starting school, and all the kids are starting to mix together again, and our nurses will surely be hopping with different outbreaks and activities and getting that information out there. And we have a health education program that we'd like to introduce into the schools that they can call the health department. Schools can call us, or if parents are interested and want to give us a contact at a school, we can take that in about teaching children how to wash their hands appropriately. And we'd be happy to do that.
So how do people find you? Is there a website?
Yes.
How do they call the health department if they have questions? And I'll remind everybody shortly that, you know, about the download. People can listen to this as many times as they'd like to, Karen, with all the information that you've given our way. But tell us about your website, or how do people reach the health department and that kind of thing.
Sure. They can call us at 908-788-1351. And they can also reach us on our website. It's the county website, co.hunterdon.nj.us, and follow the links to departments and find the health department there. And
there's one more time.
Okay. 908-788-1351, or on the web, co.hunterdon.nj.us.
So that's county, our county, then NJ for New Jersey, and then US. And that's how, okay, good.
Yes, and then find the link for the health department under the departments of the county.
Okay. And then there's subsections, one would assume, under there.
Yes, we have all of our different subsections. So if you had an interest in vector control, if you have an interest in the programs for public health nursing, public health preparedness, weights and measures, registered environmental health specialists, and we have a number of other environmental programs also that we can talk about another time. But there's information on our website about all those different programs, and we encourage residents to learn more about the health department, and if they would be interested in becoming involved as a volunteer, we would gladly take them for that as well.
Wow. Ain't no small job, this health officer, is it? And I know you have an expert team there that you rely heavily on. But I am going to ask you back to talk maybe next time about environmental health or vector control. That always has such an, a sort of Batman-ish kind of ring for me. And then hazmats, I think, is another big one. So I've already asked Karen if she'll join us again in the future to talk.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Jason Wirt.
We're doing targeted searches. We have teams of people who are going out searching for a very specific person based on the missing person's case to a very specific place.
A CAL FIRE official describing rescue efforts for the 100 missing in the wildfires across California. One of those searches discovering two of the missing are dead. The death toll now standing at 26 from the wildfires that are ripping through Northern California's wine country. More than 3,500 buildings have been destroyed. 200,000 acres have burned. President Trump signing a major executive order on health care that he says benefits all Americans, including the bottom line for the government.
This will cost the United States government virtually nothing, and people will have great, great health care.
The executive order is going to allow Americans to buy health care across state lines, increasing competition in the marketplace. USA Radio News.
Are you a football bettor? If so, you've definitely seen the sports gambling movie that Hollywood made called Two for the Money, starring Al Pacino and Matthew McConaughey. As you know, it's all about the world's most successful professional sports handicapper, Brandon Lang, the legend who's a documented 21-3 lifetime with his Super Bowl picks. Hollywood only makes movies about winners. And when it comes to betting football, there's no bigger winner than Brandon Lang. Oscar winner Matthew McConaughey played Brandon Lang in the movie. But the real Brandon Lang can make you money tonight absolutely free. Get his best bet, along with those of his 7 top handicappers, for free. That's a $700 value for free. You pick the day you want to win. Tonight, Saturday in college football, Sunday in the NFL, it's your call. Simply text the word FREE to 30838 to get all 8 winners for free. No strings attached. Again, text the word FREE to 30838. Win now. Text FREE to 30838.
Protests continue in Kenya over the disputed presidential election. Here's Bill Zinfer.
There have been weeks of demonstrations in Kenya ever since President Uhuru Kenyatta was declared the winner in an August election. Kenya's Supreme Court later annulled that vote and called for a new election. The bans cover the central business districts of Nairobi, Mombasa, and Kisumu. The new election is scheduled for October 26th.
White House Chief of Staff John Kelly spoke with reporters today, saying one of his biggest concerns is a nuclear North Korea.
If this continues in North Korea, eventually other countries become nuclear powers. Obviously, we already have some out there.
Kelly also said that it's not his job to control President Trump. He says it's his job.